Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I got to tell you something. I mean, this sounds so crazy, you'd almost think that even Hollywood couldn't come up with something as nutty as this. But the very same Secret Service that failed President Trump 1 month and 2 days ago by letting him get shot in the head just failed him again yesterday, although not quite so disastrously as they did in Butler County, Pennsylvania in July. Welcome to the program. I'll get you your phone calls and emails a bit later. But I have on the line with me right now the young lady who broke this huge story about a Secret Service agent who sneaked away while on duty to breastfeed her baby while she was guarding an event where Donald Trump was due to arrive in minutes for a rally yesterday in North Carolina. And that young lady is Susan Crabtree, political correspondent for Real Clear Politics and White House reporter as well. Susan, welcome back to the show. Thanks for taking the time on short notice. What the heck happened in this case?
Well, it is quite concerning because I thought this couldn't be true when I started hearing it last night. And then I heard it from multiple sources, and I just started saying, I have to take this seriously. I have to start working on this tonight. So what happened was there was a site agent that is in charge of all of the security at different rallies. That was in events, campaign events, they're called site agents. They're in charge of the entire event security. So the site agent at the North Carolina rally when Trump was coming in, they do what is a final check. They do a walkthrough, and they were looking for one of their post standers. It's called that's what most Secret Service agents do. They stand post. They're supposed to stay there, and he couldn't find this particular agent, a female agent. And he found her in what is called the hard room, which is supposed to be reserved for anything, an emergency comes up. They need to take the president in there. It's just a holding room, the former president, if they need to take their protectee in there. And she was breastfeeding her child. And, you know, I am a big fan of breastfeeding. I'm a champion of that. As a woman, I know it was very difficult when I was working at the White House to do that. And so I made extra effort to ensure that I could continue to feed my young daughter. And I made huge, it took a lot of effort going back and forth from the White House. They only have a little bit of a refrigerator in there to make sure I was doing that. And here she is, though. It's a time and a place issue, right?
Right.
This is not against breastfeeding, because I know I'm getting a lot of the inundation of criticism for that. Well, no, I'm sorry. I am very pro breastfeeding. This has to do with 5 minutes before Donald Trump is coming into an event and you are not where you're supposed to be and you're on assignment and you're dealing with all kinds of security threats against the former president. We just had an assassination attempt. It was the 1 month and 1 day. There was 1 month and 1 day since the assassination attempt, and here we are, and you're not where you're supposed to be, and your boss, basically, a fellow agent in a supervisor capacity, is astounded. And then he gets
because he didn't
too.
Know where she was. She didn't ask permission. And I know people are immediately saying, Susan, and I want you to explain it because you did it in the story you did for Real Clear Politics. How in the world does a baby end up inside the secure perimeter in the hard room, which is set aside for emergency? Say you had a president bleeding from an attack like we had a month ago. That's where you'd take him, to this hard room where it's guarded. So it's a safe place to deal with any kind of emergency. Explain how that baby got there, because that makes the situation even worse, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So there are things called pins. You have to be pinned to be approved for the Secret Service to be in a certain area behind the scenes, for instance, on the path that the president is going to be taking, and you want it to be secure. If you're a Secret Service agent, you wear your pin, and anybody else who's coming into that area needs to be pinned. That means they've had their clearance for the day. You have to submit that the day before, and they have to do background check on you to make sure you're not a threat to the president. But in this case, an event staff that wasn't pinned, somebody who was working the event, maybe on the campaign side, I'm not sure, let this particular agent into the hard room and allowed two family members that were unpinned to come with her.
And were those? Do you know whether those family members were even cleared when they come to? I've been in and out of these perimeters too, not as much as you, but when you get there, you may have to do a magnetometer. You may have to show what's in your pockets. Were those family members cleared in any way? Do we know?
I do not know that, and that's a great question. I did not ask that. I will ask my sources and let you know. It is unbelievable that this happened and that we're dealing with these kinds of constant, it's about professional behavior. I've written just 2 days ago, I wrote a whole story about the infighting and recriminations and rancor taking place on the Trump detail. Now, this person was not a member of the Trump detail, but this was two months ahead of time. They had a dressing down by their bosses for just kind of like what I consider high school behavior. Some of it was that two people were falling asleep at Mar-a-Lago, and instead of nudging them awake, a special agent took photos of them and distributed them among just the Secret Service,
oh,
but not.
Geez.
It's still, you know, that upset the bosses, and this type of thing is happening from time and time again.
Well, and by the way, you point out in your story in Real Clear Politics, I'm talking to Susan Crabtree, she broke this story, you are not allowed to bring any child to a protective assignment. This woman is assigned out of the Atlanta field agent. I don't know if she drove up or flew up to North Carolina to do her job, but apparently somebody, her family members, brought her baby with them to North Carolina and then made arrangements to go over and bring the child inside the secure perimeter within minutes of President Trump's arrival so she could breastfeed the child while she wasn't doing her job?
That's exactly what happened. And the child, from what I understand, is not a young child, not an infant. It's a toddler, 2 years old. So you can actually give it, children that age, solid food. So it just stretches the imagination why this is beyond comprehension, why this is happening a month and a day after the assassination attempt. And like I said, there's all kinds of professional problems going on with Secret Service. And we just yesterday, Ronald Rowe, the acting Secret Service director that took Kimberly Chiel's place after she resigned under bipartisan outrage and pressure, he just gave a pep talk to the entire agency yesterday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and was telling everybody that, you know, we need to really, you know, change things in the Secret Service. We're not going to do more with less. We're going to get rid of that mantra. We're going to hire more people. And we're also want to make sure that everyone is on the same team and that we're all working together.
Absolutely right. That's Susan Crabtree. She broke the story, a Secret Service agent who deserted her post as President Trump was due to arrive.
Be honest. You're listening because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say. sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, since so much of the Pacific Northwest is literally on fire right now, I think it's the perfect time to talk about what we could do with all those burned trees. Now, in the last couple of days, literally millions of acres of public lands in Oregon and Washington have gone up in flames. Now, those burned forests could have been salvaged logged for literally billions of board feet of timber to build things in America. But every single time, the so-called environmentalists, you know, the ones who are always preaching at you about recycling at every opportunity, they fight salvage logging in the courts and in the legislatures, and far too often they are successful. It ends up with a burned over forest not being salvage logged. They want those billions of board feet of lumber to simply rot on the stump, producing a physical danger to anybody who ventures into the public forest. And of course, those burned over forests provide some fantastic fuel for future fires. And if you don't think that burned over areas catch fire again, they do. It also means you don't quickly replant those forests and return them to their former glory. No, the Greens refuse to do it. So isn't it a bit much when this week officials unveiled the most visible part of a $2 billion renovation of Portland International Airport, its fancy new wooden roof? 3 years ago, they figured that wood roof would cost about $100 million. Now, I'd love to see an actual estimate of what a conventional roof would have cost. I'm guessing considerably less. And by the way, between the initial estimate 3 years ago and today, they had the price went up about 25%. It came in at $125 million. But boy, ain't she pretty. But hey, it's taxpayer money, so who really cares? And what makes up 80% of that brand new fancy wood roof at PDX? That's right. It's lumber harvested from burned over forests by Frères Brothers Lumber Company. And I applaud them for doing it. The Northwest has lots and lots of burned over forests. In fact, we have them in abundance. As I said, every single year, in an average year, the state of Oregon burns about 500,000 acres. State of Washington burns about 500,000 acres. This region has actually seen a third of a century go by in which we had no fires at all. But of course, back then, we were actually logging in the woods, so the fires got put out and they didn't get started to begin with, and the forests were more fire safe. These days, spotted owls and all the rest of that garbage has led people to believe you just leave a forest there, it'll be there forever. No, it'll be there till it catches fire and burns to the ground. And the environmentalist Greens, who are usually all about recycling, say, no, let all that wood just sit out there and rot. Send some methane into the air. And for God's sake, don't replant those forests. That's what they want. It's literally their public policy position. I only wish they'd get behind salvage logging of all the burned out forests, including the nearly 2 million acres that have burned just this year in both Oregon and Washington. And then, since we're talking about airports, let me talk about something that just happened in SeaTac. And it actually became today's question of the day, which came in from Neri Carmi, who wrote in about this story. The city of SeaTac has decided to drop all charges against dozens of protesters who literally blocked access to Seattle-Tacoma International Airport for hours. Now, this happened 4 months ago, and SeaTac says, yep, we're just going to drop all the charges. 46 defendants in that case who blocked a roadway into the airport. They blocked it for hours, about 3 hours. The police were finally able to break it up. They made arrests. And now nothing's going to happen to the people who are arrested. It delayed about 24 flights, and that's outrageous. So the question I got from Neri Carmi, who wrote in, and you can send questions too. It's talk@LarsLarson.com. Hey, Lars, why did the city of SeaTac drop the charges? If you have 3 traffic infractions in 1 year or 4 in 2 years, you get your license revoked for 6 months. What a double standard for the pro-Hamas rioters. Well, I gave you the answer. Extortion works. And this is the message you're getting from government. Extortion works. The city of SeaTac practically admits it. They say they're dropping charges in hopes that appeasing the pro-terrorism rioters will keep those law-breaking protesters at bay. By the way, if you want to check on how appeasement works, check in with either the late Neville Chamberlain, Or the ghost of Neville Chamberlain, or you could check in with Joe Biden, who's appeased the Iranians like crazy, and we saw what came out of his funding of the Iranians. It is more terrorism and more dead bodies. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, for reasons that are pretty obvious, given the story I opened up with today, I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the Secret Service. And why? Because the Secret Service and its agents have exhibited absolute negligence and malfeasance toward their duty to protect officials like President Trump. The fact that they let him take a bullet to the head a month ago. And now we've got a Secret Service agent who decides that breastfeeding her 2-plus-year-old toddler child is more important than actually doing her job. And she sneaked away from her duties yesterday, just as Donald Trump was about to arrive. They said he was 5 minutes away. She was supposed to be standing a post. She was not standing a post. She sneaked away. Her family sneaked her baby into the secure perimeter around that event. And she was breastfeeding the child. Her boss didn't know about it. He didn't know she was gone, and he couldn't find her. Now, do you think she's going to get fired? I can practically guarantee she will not. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Hey, Lars, I work for a small road electrical company, and WashDOT is making us redo the work for no other reason than that they can't. Sound Transit had us do the work that cost about $1.5 million. We could have done for less than half of that, but when we suggested, they laughed at my boss and walked out of the meeting. Now we're doing it over again. Taxpayer money, so I guess who cares? Yeah, that's exactly it. The people we entrust with our taxpayer money don't always spend it, or even maybe don't often spend it very well. Let's go to Chris in the Tri-Cities listening on KONA. Chris, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Lars?
Hey, quite well.
I was with this whole CTAC thing. And
yeah.
I understand they're dropping the charges and all that, but do the airlines have losses? Do they not have any recourse on this? Could they not say, okay, fine, CTAC, you want to drop the charges? We're going to sue you for our losses.
You're going to find out that the city has immunity when they say, we've decided that we're not going to pursue charges. They could do it. Now, the airlines could go after the individual protesters. I'm willing to bet they're mostly what lawyers like to call judgment proof. In other words, if you get a judgment against somebody for $1 million and the guy ain't worth 10 cents, how much money are you going to actually get? But could they sue the city of SeaTac for dropping all those charges? You could try, and it might make some good news for a while, but I don't think a lawyer would tell you it's likely to succeed.
Yeah, figures. Not a lot of recourse.
Imagine what they're telling citizens. They tell citizens, pay your tickets, buy your car license tabs, follow the law. But for these almost 50 people who broke the law, and they broke it very, very publicly, we're going to simply let them go. They're sending a message, the laws don't apply to certain people in Joe Biden's America. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You'd almost think that some of the law-breaking people in the Puget Sound area have said, I know what we'll do. We'll set up an illegal operation right in front of City Hall, also in front of the local police department, and see what happens. It's like a big parody operation that the Babylon Bee would come up with. You know, local police in Burien concerned about drug encampment at their doorstep. But Jonathan Cho and I have talked about this a number of times. Jonathan, of course, is a journalist with the Discovery Institute, and we value his work. Hey, Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks again, Lars. So much happening out here. You can't make this stuff up.
No, in fact, before we get to your confrontation, and I think he deserves to be confronted as Constantine, the King County executive, would you mind remind my listeners of the crazy stuff that's been going on in Burien?
Yeah, it's really a sad situation because the homeless are allowed to just simply now camp in the middle of the street in Burien because the enforcement is not happening. The enforcement wing here in King County is controlled by Dow Constantine, the executive, and he's essentially not allowing his sheriff's deputies to enforce the city's public camping ban. So instead, what he's done is he's set up an encampment right across the street from the courthouse, erected a permanent fence now, and this has turned into a revolving door for criminals, drug addicts, sex traffic. And just last week, two kids, 7 and 6 years old, had to be rescued out of this encampment.
Now, in fact, when they take kids out of these encampments, does anybody face charges? Because I would think that'd be kind of a prima facie case of child abuse.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of questions still for the mom who was responsible. I interviewed her exclusively. She was being helped out by a homeless outreach group called The More We Love, a totally legitimate group, not part of the homeless industrial complex. Yeah, she has a lot of struggles and so on and so forth. In fact, Child Protective Services called, and they were about to take the kids away. But fortunately, they got housed, and they're now in a stable situation. But good. Bottom line, King County and Dow Constantine are allowing this dangerous encampment and situation to flourish. It's completely unacceptable.
I kind of laughed about it because, Jonathan, ordinarily conservatives would say, oh, the criminals, they want to do their crimes right in front of the police station. That'll be convenient because then they can just be quickly arrested and brought in, thrown in jail and charged and then go off to their trial. But this is where, you know, Dow Constantine and King County and to some extent the city of Burien are allowing this to happen and allowing it to put a blight on their city and not doing anything that they could do under the law. And it seems to send a very bizarre message to citizens. It doesn't matter if you break the law, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, it is really a bizarre situation going on in Burien, unique, and you have neighbors and business owners essentially caught in the middle. The city of Burien is actually suing King County, and King County is actually suing the city of Burien all over this public camping ordinance. And of course, we all know the U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled that local jurisdictions have the authority to sweep encampments even without, you know, quote unquote, shelter available. But Dow Constantine is choosing not to. Now, some of my sources are saying that Dow has a personal beef with Burien because last year the city defied him and actually cleared an encampment even though he told the city not to. So they believe that Dow is sticking it now to the city of Burien. But again, in this confrontation, I have to hold Dow accountable, and I asked him point blank if he set up the camp. He's now denying it. So King County can't get its story straight, and I'm about to launch my second part of this investigation next week where we actually have the email documents showing that King County executives essentially are completely not talking to each other. The left hand's not talking to the right hand, and it's now just a mess.
I'm talking to Discovery Institute journalist Jonathan Cho. I want you to go watch what happens when he confronts Dow Constantine, because this is bizarre that when you go to a man who's been a long time, I know people want to say public servant. I don't actually think that people like Constantine serve the public, but they like the title anyway because it makes them feel special, as though everybody else in society isn't really serving the public unless you're actually drawing a government paycheck, even if you're doing something very essential. But when you go to this guy and he just says, no, I'm not involved in this, what does he say about what he eventually plans to do, not just to try to ameliorate the damage that's happening to a community, but actually solve the problem once and for all? Does he just give you platitudes?
Yeah, it was all spin and you know, Dow's talking points. First of all, he wouldn't give us a timeline on when this encampment would be cleared. And get this, Lars, he cited the wrong homeless outreach group that's allegedly doing outreach here in Burien. Because, again, The More We Love is now the homeless outreach group that's been officially contracted by the city of Seattle, but rather the city of Burien. But Dow says Reach is the one doing homeless outreach. Problem with that is the city of Burien cut its contract with Reach because the group was failing to perform to house people. So, again, Dow Constantine, supposed to be the leader of King County, has no clue actually what's happening on the ground.
Well, and in fact, Jonathan, I know you've done some stories on this, but people have to start asking themselves, when you've got city and county operations like Portland that are spending north of $500 million, and Puget Sound, for all I know, the number may be $1 billion a year, that people should start asking, if $1 billion a year is going into this effort, Where are we actually seeing it on the ground? I mean, you'd think by now every single homeless person or drug addict would have their own condominium somewhere if we're pouring $1 billion a year in, or even $500 million a year. And I know where it's going, what you mentioned just a moment ago. There has been erected a homeless industrial complex that sucks hundreds of millions of dollars out of taxpayer money and then produces nothing, because they're the ultimate, I guess, example of what we've all talked about for years. And that is, if you solve the problem, your job goes away. If you make the problem persist, then you will have a job and probably budget increases till the cows come home.
100% right. That's what sums it up at this point. It's too big to fail. And that's why there's been no accountability, because if you have accountability and did simple accounting on this, to simply measure the results, you would not be getting funding based on what I'm seeing here in King County. And it's just this, you know, ongoing vicious cycle right now, and you have community suffering, you have the homeless suffering, you have drug addicts here suffering, and it comes down to ideology as well, Lars. We've talked about this numerous times on your show. They believe in King County in something called housing first. They believe that they're only going to move the homeless if there's a studio or an apartment or a tiny house village for them. Shelters to King County are unacceptable. Congregate shelters, we have to share a bunk bed or a cot, those are unacceptable for some reason.
And yet, I've seen models like this in other cities even decades ago, where they would get people off the street, warm, safe, dry, dormitory. And you say, well, how do I get out of the dormitory to some nicer housing? You say, you mind your P's and Q's, you stay off the drugs, and you obey the rules of the dormitory. Then you get to move to, you know, better spaces. And when they do that kind of thing, and they said, you know, they basically set performance measures that are doable even by a drug addict or a homeless person or somebody who's mentally ill, then they respond to those incentives. Nothing in the Northwest meets that model.
Yeah, and that's the fight. And at the end of the day, again, you have the homeless who are the victims. You have the drug addicts who are the victims, because they're not getting the right services, because you have the county, the cities, the state even, again, pushing the wrong public policies that continue to fail.
You can check out the journalism of Jonathan Cho at the Discovery Institute. Jonathan, it's always great to have you on the show. Thanks so very much.
Take care, Lars.
Absolutely right. Jonathan Cho, J. Cho on X, if you want to check him out. Glad to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up in a moment, major wind projects have been canceled on the east coast of the United States for financial reasons. They don't make financial sense, and major power companies have simply walked away from their investments. And now the biggest existing wind farm off Nantucket shut down because of catastrophic failure that contaminated nearby beaches. And on the west coast, they're still pushing ahead with offshore wind turbines.
Just think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I've got one for you. This week, the U.S. federal government's Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which is an agency that shouldn't even exist, signed off on an environmental assessment so that they can start making leases off the West Coast, mostly off Oregon, for people to put in windmills at some point in the future. And all of this is happening while we've had two major developments in wind energy on the East Coast. Number one, four major wind energy projects have had their major energy company, one of them was BP, simply walk away from their projects, saying, even with all the billions of dollars shoveled in by Congress, this doesn't make financial sense. So they simply walked away from four major proposed energy projects because they don't pencil out. And then we had the development that you might likely have heard about, and that was off Nantucket, where there was already one of the largest wind farms in the world. And one of the almost brand new turbines blew apart. The blades fractured, they went everywhere, and you had carbon fiber and fiberglass contaminating six different beaches with no clear idea how to even clean that up. So you've got projects that don't make sense economically. You've got projects where the technology blows apart even when it's brand new. And on the West Coast, they're still saying, yep, we're going to push ahead with this. If that makes sense to you, by all means, call the show and tell me why. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And this segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. Let's go to Oak Harbor, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KVI. Troy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, about the homeless issue in the city of Burien, Washington, I might be a little late for bringing it up, but it is kind of a conspiracy. Now, I don't completely know the job of the Washington State Attorney General, but I'm saying the conflict between the city of Burien and then King County and involving the sheriff not being able to do anything about the homeless crisis.
Stop, Troy. One small correction. It's not that the sheriff can't do something. It's that he won't. It's like when if you told your kids, go clean up the yard, and they say, no, we're not going to do it. Not going to do it is different than can't do it. The sheriff is capable of acting. He chooses not to. Dow Constantine is capable of acting. He chooses not to. So with that small correction, what were you going to ask?
Well, could that, I know Attorney General Bob Ferguson won't do it, but could he resolve it one side or another? Is that possible?
I don't know that, you know, because ordinarily the Attorney General is not in charge of local law enforcement. He would defer to the local law enforcement agencies, and whether or not he has the power to step in if he was so inclined, and I don't think Bob Ferguson would do this. I think Bob Ferguson subscribes to the same politics that Burien does. I think Burien's actually trying to get this taken care of, but the sheriff will not act. King County will not act. They choose not to act. They have the legal authority. Even the Supreme Court has said they have the legal authority to clear out these encampments. They choose not to do it. And do I think Bob Ferguson would choose to do it if he had the authority? No, I don't. I know that the last thing he's going to do while he's running for governor is go out and do something that violates all the things he appears to believe as a politician. He's a left-wing Democrat, even though his office is a nonpartisan office, but he's running as the Democrat candidate for governor, and he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't think it's the right solution. And Troy, what's really crazy is when you say, can anybody show you anywhere in America where housing first has actually worked? Because the theory is that if you find somebody who's homeless and drug addicted and mentally ill and has all these other problems, that if you get them into housing, that they will then solve their other problems. There isn't any place in America where that has worked. Because if you're addicted to drugs, that's a powerful addiction. If somebody gives you a house, then you're a drug addict in a house, or a drug addict in a condominium, or a drug addict in an apartment. Having an apartment does not solve your problem. And Troy, I want to remind people, the place this whole idea of housing first originated is the great constitutional scholar Barack Hussein Obama, who 11 years ago, he declared, we will solve homelessness in 10 years. He made that promise 11 years ago, and he said, we will do it with housing first. And the way he forced it on cities, they're not forced by him anymore, but the way he forced it on them was he said to cities like Portland and Seattle and Tacoma and, you know, Spokane, if you want housing and urban development money, which they hand out by the billions, if you want the money, you have to agree to go to a housing first policy where you house the addicts, but you don't ask them, you don't even demand of them that they solve their own problem. And Troy, I can tell you, I think I walk the walk and I talk the talk. When my dad was still alive, he was a hardcore, longtime alcoholic. And when he came to Portland, he wasn't homeless. I mean, he had resources, but he said, can I stay with you and Tina for a time? And we let him stay with us. But I laid down one hard and fast rule, no drinking. You are not drinking while you're living here, because I knew what kind of trouble he could be when he was drinking. So if he chose to drink, he went out, drank somewhere else, came back sober, because otherwise he was out. Now, if I'll do that to my own family, and I think most families would say to their drug-addicted kid or alcohol-addicted adult, if you want to live here, you have to stop the drugs. And if you don't stop the drugs, then you're out on the street again. That works. Barack Obama's idea, Dow Constantine's idea, does not work.
The Lars Larson Show.
The bit so in exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and it's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. You know, today's X poll really fits into one of the news stories from today, and that is about the presidential race and about Kamala Harris and about Donald Trump. And you know that Donald Trump had challenged Kamala Harris to three debates. Now, she does not seem anxious to debate, and given the way she usually speaks or does not speak, I'm not surprised that she's afraid to get on the debate stage. You'd think she'd be champing at the bit to say, yep, I want to explain why all of my Marxist communist ideas are vastly superior to Donald Trump's crazy capitalism. I mean, she clearly doesn't think much of capitalism, but what has she agreed to? Well, she agreed after Donald Trump challenged her more than a week ago to three debates. He said, I've already got them arranged. They're on ABC, NBC, and Fox News. Will you agree to three? She agreed to one. Well, now, as of today, she has now agreed to a second debate, but the second debate is going to happen in October. And if you say, hold on, October, Lars, by October, millions of Americans will have already cast their ballots. There will be ballots in the mail. There will be early voting. There will be absentee voting. There will be all the stuff that provided such a mess in 2020. So I'm going to ask you in the poll on X today, should the second presidential debate be held after millions of people have voted or before they vote? I'm going to vote for before they vote. I would like to see people get a chance to measure up these two candidates. I think Donald Trump easily comes out on top, but I'm biased in that direction. I think Kamala Harris is a loon. The first time she cackles on the debate stage because she doesn't know what the question is, and she certainly doesn't know what the answer is, I think she's going to be done. She'll fall on her face, not like Joe Biden did. Joe Biden fell on his face in an entirely different way. Couple of decades ago, he could actually hold a sentence or two together. His ideas were still bad, but he could actually speak for a change. But these days, he can't do that much at all. Although, I'll tell you what, Joe Biden just gave a speech this morning. He was at this big event. It's mostly for Kamala Harris, but she was nice enough to put him up to the microphone. And he was just going on and on. He said, I've got a message for you. Because he was disparaging Donald Trump for what's called the 2025 Project, which is not part of the Trump campaign. It is not connected to the Trump campaign. It's from a private think tank called the Heritage Foundation, and it's the work of about 110 different conservative groups with a wish list of things they'd like to see changed. In a lot of ways, they're no different than any other interest group out there. I'm sure the Sierra Club has a list of dozens of things they'd like to have changed by the next president. I'm sure that the NRA has dozens of things they'd like to see change. So when the Democrats tried to make Project 2020 into a boogeyman, that's what they did. They said, we're going to connect it to Donald Trump. It's not. We're going to suggest it's his idea. It's not. We're going to suggest that if somebody makes up a wish list for the next president, that the next president absolutely positively has to do it. No, he doesn't. And I don't think we've seen a president who's more about, I'm going to decide what's right for the country. I'm not going to let other people do it. I'll listen to their ideas, but I ultimately will make that decision. Well, what did Joe Biden say? Joe Biden actually told this crowd within the last couple of hours, I've got a Project 2025 for you. Our Project 2025 is beat the hell out of them. I'm not kidding. Joe said it. And all of this nonsense about we've got to cool down the rhetoric. Because you remember that right before Donald Trump took a bullet to the head, Joe Biden was out saying crazy things that if a Republican said them, the Democrats would say, you see, he's trying to incite people to violence. Well, I'm going to tell you, all you Democrats who love to throw that accusation, consider that your guy, I realize he's not running anymore, but for the next few months, he is president of the United States, said, let's beat the hell out of them. And what do you say about that? Let's go to James in Everett, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, James, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Lars, I was just curious about motor voter. And what does that mean to you?
What it means is they passed a federal law a long time ago to encourage people to get registered to vote. And it used to be just encourage, meaning if you walked into the DMV in every state in America and you said, I need a license, or I just moved to town, I need to get a driver's license, or I need to change my address, they would say, when they were done transacting the business, they would ordinarily say, hey, by the way, are you registered to vote, and do you want to get registered to vote? And if you did, you, in those days, took a, you know, a little form out of a box, filled out all your information, and you registered to vote. And if you weren't interested, then you didn't register to vote. These days, an awful lot of states have gone to automatic voter registration, meaning that if you go in and you get an identity, you know, either an ID card, a picture ID, or you get a driver's license or a CDL or an enhanced driver's license, that they automatically register you to vote whether you ask for it or not. And then if you want to get rid of that registration, there's a process to go through. So it's an opt-out of voting these days rather than an opt-in. That's what motor voter is about.
Well, I think I remember your buddy John Carlson interviewing the former Secretary of State back in 2020.
Kim Wyman.
And I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. She went to work for the Biden administration.
Kim Wyman.
Huh?
Kim Wyman. Yeah.
And I remember he asked her a question. He says, I'm paraphrasing, but are all our votes legit, basically? And she says, well, and she hesitated for 10 seconds. And she says, well, if anybody has any information about people not voting properly or illegal votes, give me a call. And I'm like, well, isn't that your job?
It's her job.
The Secretary of State.
It is. And we should also say something. The problem is, James, and I'm going to keep citing this case from this year. There was a woman, happened to be in my county, not your county, in Clark County, and she got caught. She admitted that she was a foreign national. She was legally living in the United States, so she's a green card. She knew that it was against the law to register to vote. She went ahead and registered anyway. She knew that by registering and by signing her name that she was breaking federal law, for which you can be sent to prison, federal prison, for 5 years. She knew it was illegal. She knew the consequences. She did it anyway. And she voted, I think it was four times in the last several years. She voted in four separate elections. She knew it was illegal. And when the investigators asked her, she said, yeah, I know it's illegal. I know I can't do it. I'm doing it anyway. And she did. And you know what? This prosecutor in Clark County named Tony Golick decided, I'm not going to prosecute her. So in other words, you have somebody who's a confessed criminal to criminal activity involving elections. And Tony Golick said, I'm not going to prosecute her. So even when we tell the authorities, oftentimes, absolutely nothing happens. And with automatic voter registration, that means there will be millions of ballots floating around in November, and they're going to voters, and we don't know who's voting them. I'm on the...
The things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Send him money. Money! We're doing nothing but just being here. It's not right, and I want answers.
That is a veteran of the United States military. She is a black woman. I wish I could interview her, but I've got to find out who she is. But this post on Instagram really drew my attention because this woman is making a complaint that I figure is being made at least, you know, to themselves by a lot of Americans who are wondering, why is it that when 15, maybe even as many as 20 million illegal aliens flood into America at the invitation of and with the assistance, aiding and abetting of Joe Biden, they flood into the country and they're not only not pushed back, but Joe Biden has made sure they have bus tickets and airplane tickets. They have debit cards full of money. They have a hotel room, they have food, they have medical care, they have everything else. But this woman's story really puts it, you know, just puts the stamp on it. So I want to tell you more about this lady. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And this is a good one. This is a conspiracy theory that is absolutely unbelievable. This woman who served in the U.S. military gets out and works hard. And she said she worked hard to be self-employed. Take a listen to how she did it.
I need this message to go out to our vice president, who's running for president. I have heard all over social media about, excuse me if I say anything wrong, immigrants getting loans, money. It was hard for me to believe. It was just extremely hard for me to believe.
Now, it was hard for her to believe, but then guess what happened? She tells how she got into business, because when she got out of the military, she thought, I'm going to be my own business. I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a food truck. Listen to that.
I've been in business such a long time. Back in 2019, I purchased my first food truck. It cost me over $25,000. I paid it cash money. I worked hard to pay for this truck. I'm now selling it.
Yeah, now she's selling it. Look, the fact is, she worked hard, put away $25,000. Anybody who's ever saved money knows how hard that can be to put that money there. Don't touch it. You dream of owning a business. You buy effectively your own small business by having a food truck. And now, after a long time of running that business, she's decided she's going to sell it. I don't know what she plans to do next, but listen to the guy who showed up to buy it.
I had a guy come to look at purchasing my vehicle, or my food truck, and he explained to me he's an illegal immigrant. He has no credit. He has no money in the bank. But he showed me his paperwork that he will receive funds to purchase my food truck.
Yeah, and funds from the government. In other words, the Biden administration and too many state governments have decided we're going to help these people out. They're not legally in the country. That's problem number one. Problem number two, they can't legally work in the United States unless they're either a citizen or a green card holder. And yet here's this guy with paperwork in his hand saying, I don't have any money. I don't have any credit. I'm not even legally in the country, but I've got this paperwork from the government and they will provide me the money so that I can buy this business from you. Listen to what she says next.
I'm thankful that he's buying it, but I'm hurt that I worked so hard to pay cash for my food truck. I have good credit. Can't even get a business loan.
Couldn't get a business loan. And the fact is, this is a black American. And I want you to understand something. The reason that black Americans are tending toward Trump is they realize this on a small scale is what is happening on a big scale. That Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the so-called border czar, who now denies she ever had the title, even though every legacy media in America called her border czar for years, they are inviting people in to take the jobs and the livelihood and, the first time they step across the border, the money from the American taxpayer. Listen to her final appeal.
Somebody, please tell me, how do I work so hard to have somebody who comes to this country, not long, no credit, and he shows me paperwork where they'll be funding him money?
Funding and money, and guess where his money is coming from? It's coming from American taxpayers like her. Just consider that that's the reason you see so many Americans who say, I'm not voting for Kamala Harris. I'm not voting for Joe Biden, and they weren't going to vote for Joe Biden because they looked at these two and thought, you are giving away the legacy of the people of the United States. You are inviting illegals to come in, and then you are handing them American taxpayer cash to buy us out and push us aside. To your calls now, and let's start with a naysayer. Hey, JC, welcome to the program. We love naysayers, as you know. What's on your mind, and what do you and I disagree about?
Yes, Lars. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I called in about your voter fraud situation that you claim. I think you presented a case, like one case, that you actually had proof, and that person was going to be charged, but the state of Washington did not decide to pursue charges against her, which they should have. They had every right to throw her in jail. It's very illegal to commit fraud. The Washington Republicans have a website there in the state of Washington to report fraud. And the one thing
about
it,
but it doesn't do any good if the prosecutors won't prosecute, does it, JC?
Then why have the page? Then why have the, why report it?
Because at the very least, hold on, JC, here's the reason to have the page. If you say there's a problem and people like you say, it doesn't exist, I never hear about anybody being prosecuted. And you say, here's the information, and that's why I gave you one case. Now, I only have a three-hour show.
I'm going to correct you first, Lars. Let me correct you.
Correct me. Go ahead. Correct me.
There is voter fraud, okay? Voter fraud is committed, and there is a page, your heritage page list.
That's Hans von Spakovsky, 1,500 cases. Yep.
There's a lot of cases. There's probably, I want to say on average, probably 10,000 a year that are committed.
I'm sure you're right. Where do we disagree?
Well, you said that I don't believe in it. I said I believe there is, but not enough to overturn any election.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the problem is, JC, if you're not paying attention, you don't know what's going on. Because in the last 4 years, we have documented the fact that groups around America have identified thousands of dead voters. Now, don't forget that in the six states Joe Biden had to win to be able to get the presidency, which he took, even though they cheated, the margin in Georgia was less than 12,000. The margin in Arizona was less than 20,000. So everybody hears the numbers for the whole country and says, well, you'd have to have millions of fraudulent votes. No, you don't. You need a few thousand votes in any one of six states, and you either win or lose the presidency. So anybody who thinks that you have to have thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of fraudulent votes to change the outcome, you do not. In most of those states, the margin was less than 20,000 votes between winning the state and losing the state. If you win the state, you get the Electoral College votes, all of them. If you lose the state, you lose all of them. They cheated in at least six states, and they're going to cheat this time. And the thing is, we got to catch them, we got to prosecute them, and we got to throw them in jail. You're listening to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Informed and always guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I guess you could accuse me, because I always promise that I'll tell you if I have a dog in the fight. You could accuse me of having a dog in the fight here, because some of this involves radio and radio news. I've been in radio news and radio talk for about 49 years. So I'm angry about what the Kamala Harris campaign apparently did. And the guy who's reported on this is Rob McGreevy from the Daily Caller. Rob, this really makes me angry that when we hear the left constantly harping about campaign misinformation, and then, and you tell me if I'm overstating this, the Kamala Harris presidential campaign has actually engaged in rewriting news, presenting it as news, but buying it as ads on places like Google so that they can put up what appear to be positive headlines about Kamala Harris that were not written by the news organizations that they're labeled with. Have I overstated the case?
No, you're not overstating it at all. And
what happened?
Thank you for having me today, Lars.
Sure, of course, Rob.
Well, essentially, and this came out 2 days ago from a bombshell Axios report that discovered that the Harris campaign took at least 9 news organizations' headlines and manipulated them to appear as if they were giving her explicitly glowing coverage, saying, for the one example that we wrote about was about her pick of Tim Walz as vice president, saying this was a great pick, this is great for Minnesota families. Using those manipulated headlines and manipulated text in the description, turning those into Google ads and sending them to voters in swing states.
Now, they did this, why? Because they can't have their candidate go out and sing her own praises. They got to pretend that they're actually news organizations who are engaging in editorials within news coverage, which, look, when I was a straight news reporter, Rob, I always made sure you keep opinions out. Editorial belongs out. My opinion is out. You don't put opinions in news stories. So anybody would see these headlines who's in the news business and say, there's no newspaper that writes that kind of headline for that kind of story, because that would be the reporter or the headline writer editorializing. And they're doing it at the expense of the news organizations.
Right, absolutely. I mean, these organizations, and frankly, I'm more surprised that more of these organizations haven't come out and said that this is a ding on our credibility.
Hey, Rob, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I've been calling it that for a long time. I've got a theory on that, but I'll tell you about it later. I think there's a reason that only WDAY Radio did it, that complained about it.
Right. Well, you know, WDAY, out of the 9 organizations listed in the Axios report, WDAY is the only one that's not sort of corporate controlled. They're family owned, and they're not small by any means, but they're a South Dakota radio station, and they're the only ones who had any qualms with this. We reached out to all 9 organizations listed. Some of them didn't even write back. A few of them just gave us boilerplate, you know, we were not aware of this coverage. That's what AP said. That's what Reuters said. We followed up, asked them, are you planning on taking legal action? Does this in any way reflect poorly on the Harris campaign? Does it have any effect on media trust at large, which the left has been decrying since Donald Trump started his first campaign, that he was attacking the media, attacking their credibility? That was the line for the longest time. And here the Harris campaign is doing something the Trump campaign has never done, taking words in print and changing them to appear as if these news organizations are explicitly endorsing her, and nobody has a word to say about it. I'm shocked, quite frankly.
I mean, they're stealing from these news organizations. I mean, to the extent that they have a good, good reputation, and I might debate a couple of them on that. But let me ask you this. Not Reuters. Reuters, I think, tends to be a little more down the middle. But the AP, NPR, CNN, and The Guardian and The Independent all tend to tilt sometimes hard and sometimes just a bit to the left, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, AP has, I think, become more slanted in recent years. They used to be somewhat of a neutral wire service, and they've definitely engaged in some selection bias at the very least over the past few years. But yeah, that's another thing that I sort of found interesting was that the Harris campaign, I mean, no, they wouldn't have found headlines explicitly saying Tim Walz is great for Minnesota families, but there's no shortage of glowing coverage for her from these outlets that she had to fabricate her own. So I thought that was a little perplexing.
See, and I think, I mean, look, I've been in the news business. You've been in the news business. To the average person, they might think, well, what difference does it make? The difference is reporters are supposed to report the news. And we say, I don't put my opinion in. If I think that you know, the governor just announced the dumbest program in the world, I can't say it's dumb. I mean, I can now because I do a radio, and it's labeled as opinion radio. But when I was a reporter, if I thought it was dumb, I'd say, well, who says it's dumb? Well, I do, the reporter. Yeah, your opinion is out. Go find somebody who thinks the governor's new plan is the stupidest thing in the world. And if they say it, you can quote them, but you don't get to say it yourself. And they're stealing in more than one way, because they're taking somebody else's copyright works and making use of it. I mean, copyright's an issue right now because there are even music, you know, bands and artists who are saying, I don't want Donald Trump playing my song at his rallies, you know, things like that.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you got some of the biggest news organizations on the planet AP, NPR, CNN, The Guardian, etc. And the Harris campaign borrows from their reputation and says, look what great things all these news organizations are saying about Kamala Harris. And their reaction is, meh?
Right. Well, you know, that's really the issue, is the reputation here. Because if I recommend a friend for a job, and I put my name on the line for him, and he ends up a liar and a cheat and a dishonest person, that reflects poorly on me. So if, for whatever reason, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz don't end up being good candidates, don't end up becoming, if they win, a good president and vice president, the people who were bamboozled by these ads, people who aren't media literate, will say, oh, you know, WDAY, Reuters, they told me this is going to be a great pick. You know, besides the fact that reporters are supposed to be objective to maintain credibility, they're putting, the Harris campaign is putting words in these outlets' mouths, and they're words that are ultimately not true. I mean, Tim Walz is great for families. That's completely subjective. That depends on who you ask. So it's a huge problem. I'd be super interested to hear the Conspiracy Thursday and what you think about why these organizations don't have a bigger problem with it.
I think it's because they're left-wing organizations who want Kamala Harris to win. And even if she doesn't win, and I don't think she's going to win, I think Trump's going to win, and I'm going to vote for Trump, and I'm allowed to be biased because I state my biases right up front. I don't pretend this is a news, or I call myself opinion journalism, and there is opinion journalism. I mean, the late Molly Ivins, David Broder, they're all the rest, all opinion journalists. Mm-hmm. Even Cronkite was an opinion journalist because he did a commentary every freaking day. But this makes me mad that the news organizations are saying, well, even if she doesn't win, we're going to curry favor with our friends in the Democrat Party. Well, you're also proving, are they not proving Donald Trump's case that these people are the enemies of the American people because they allow the use of their copyright material and the manipulation of their reporting to suggest an endorsement of Kamala Harris where no endorsement should be in the news pages of a newspaper, and they're doing it to curry favor. And that is, I think, the definition of campaign misinformation. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, frankly, on a Conspiracy Thursday, I think that's pretty muted as far as deeply embedded conspiracies go, because almost every independent I talk to, people that aren't super far right wingers that just like to evaluate information on a case-by-case basis, can clearly see that the majority of mainstream media is in the can for Harris, for Biden, for the left.
Absolutely right. That's Rob McGreevy, who's a reporter at The Daily Caller. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails, maybe even a naysayer, too, right here on Conspiracy Thursday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Here's Lars Larson. Welcome back to the program on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Our poll on X question today: should the second presidential debate be held after millions of people have already voted or before they vote? Now, Donald Trump proposed 3 presidential debates, all of them in the month of September. Kamala Harris has only agreed to 1 of the presidential debates. The other one that she says she'll do will be in early October. So that some date in October, so that many millions of votes will have already been cast by the time she takes the stage and by the time Donald Trump mops the stage with Kamala Harris. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to Naysayer John the Electrician. John, welcome to the program. What do we disagree about today?
Been a long time, Lars. Listen, I think that you're committing felonious journalism, and it's also why I like to call your show the best constipation and squat journalism, because it's the farthest thing, quite often, from real journalism, because you cheat with the facts. And
it's opinion journalism, John.
Well, I know, but you still have to be truthful.
Tell me what I've not been true. You know, John, I always introduce naysayers by saying, what do we disagree about? Tell me what we disagree about.
Well, I'm getting to it. I'm getting.
Well, slowly, but you're burning a lot of daylight, buddy.
On the subject of voter fraud, Lars, yeah. Some time ago, you directed your listeners, so this is why I'm saying you're cheating on this, you directed your listeners to the Heritage Foundation website. So as a listener, I said, I'm always curious. I like to Google or go in. I looked at the Heritage Foundation website, and lo and behold, when you read down through the list, Republicans are committing fraud, too.
I've never denied it, so you're agreeing with me.
But the notion that somehow it's just Democrats, you say this all the time.
I don't say it's just, I've never said it was only Democrats, not once, John. Don't misquote me.
Larson, you say over and over, the Democrats can't win unless they cheat. But when 50% of the cheating is done by Republicans, and on small scales, because people do go to prison. I know you like to cite the particular case of the woman or the person in Washington.
Yeah, who confessed to voter fraud, and Tony Golic said, I will not prosecute a confessed criminal.
Lars, the numbers just aren't there. And you want to push this that somehow if Kamala Harris wins this election, it's because they cheated. It's the same.
She may not get away with the cheating, and I've said that many times, John. So you're not making sense, because so many times people said, why will this be different than that time, 2020? And I said, because, number one, about a dozen states have changed the laws substantially.
Larson,
about a dozen.
Now,
all you're doing is running off at the mouth, John.
No,
I've said this year.
You run off at the mouth all day long, Larson.
I know, and that's what they pay me to do, John. They don't pay you to do it. I'm going to tell you this. This year, about a dozen states have made major changes in their election laws to make sure the cheating is less likely. I would never suggest that it's not going to happen. And I think the Democrats will try to cheat. And I think the Trump campaign will do a much better job of, you know, taking them into court and showing that the cheating was happening. They didn't do a very good job in 2020. It will be different this time. Let's go to David in Seattle, listening on KVI. Hey, David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Hey, my conspiracy is, what happens if Trump wins in a landslide, or he's being set up to win in a significant win, and the Democrats pump the votes full of fraudulent votes in favor of Trump, and then go about the business of exposing it and prosecuting it and just dragging the whole thing
down?
That would be
an interesting twist, wouldn't it? Put a whole bunch of fraudulent votes in by the Democrat Party, and then turn around and say, you see, he got elected on fraudulent votes? That's a great double twist, isn't it?
It is, and the guy from MyPillow.com, I don't know if it's true, there's more than stuffing ballot box. They have ways of doing this digitally, apparently.
They do.
Another conspiracy, maybe.
Well, I mean, one of the things that happened this last week, I didn't spend a lot of time on it, they had a major convention of the companies that sell voting machines, you know, like Dominion and Smartmatic and those. And apparently a bunch of hackers, but these are kind of good guy, white hat hackers, they showed up and they said, look, you've got major flaws in your software. And the companies that sell these machines to cities and counties and states said, yes, we know there are flaws, but we can't fix them before the election. So what do you do in that case?
I don't know. That's we're being set
well,
up.
Well, I can perhaps. Give you one. I can give you an answer. I try to not ask stupid questions without some answer. One answer is forensic audits, where if you say, we're going to take some smart folks who know computer code, I don't, and have them sit down and look at how the vote count went, and then look for the kinds of patterns they saw in places like Georgia and Wisconsin, and say, if we do a forensic examination of the vote, maybe you don't certify the vote 30 days later because you say it's clear that digital things were done. I think they'll also find that a lot of ballots are going to be cast by people who don't exist. And I mean, earlier this week, I pointed out the Biden administration has been pushing out through federal funding of mental institutions in America that all of these mental institutions should encourage people to register to vote and cast ballots. Well, some of these people are they're not competent mentally. And you say, well, do they still have a right to vote? The Democrats have figured out a great dodge there. If you can get tens of thousands of votes from very sympathetic people who have mental illness of one kind or another, and they cast a ballot, who can say whether that was a valid vote or not? You make a very good point. The Dolores.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And even if you're only casually observing the current presidential campaign, you have to notice when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris come out and they're celebrating the idea, we're bringing down the cost of prescription drugs. Well, they're not exactly bringing the price down. They're just deciding a different group of people to pay the tab. And guess who that group is? That would be you and me. Dean Clancy joins me now, who's a senior policy guy at Americans for Prosperity. Dean, welcome back to the program.
Oh, great to be here.
This actually reminded you of the fall of the Roman Empire, didn't it? And would you mind drawing that comparison so we can bring it, you know, thousands, well, 1,700 years forward from that time? Because there's nothing new under the sun, is there?
No, you're absolutely right. Vice President Harris and interim President Biden were celebrating price controls on Medicare prescription drugs. And price controls have never worked. In fact, they did help bring down the Roman Empire under the Emperor Diocletian. I assume that's what you're referring to.
Yep.
And we have 40 centuries of experience, and basically price controls always have the same effect. They cause scarcity, black markets, and the opposite of the desired effect, which is to make things more expensive. And they're celebrating putting price controls on prescription drugs in Medicare, but the fact is they're actually causing the prices to go up for seniors for prescription drug coverage, and more importantly, they're causing the pharmaceutical companies to spend less on research and development, which means fewer new cures and therapies in the future.
So as long as there are already drugs for everything that might make you ill, then you're okay with it. But if you may be worried that I'd like to find a cure to Alzheimer's or a cure to certain kinds of cancer for which there are no great therapies, say, yeah, we're not working on that because we're not allowed to charge what the market will bear.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, it's like trying to freeze medical science and innovation at, the year 2024 and not have any future innovation. I mean, there will be some, but the effect of these government price controls is going to be that the drug companies are, in fact, we already see strong evidence of this. They're becoming more cautious. They're going to develop the drug that's basically almost the same as some existing drug, or maybe just a little bit better, but not the breakthrough drug, the one that cures the disease or really transforms life for people, because those drugs are very expensive, risky for the companies to try to develop. And now, thanks to the Biden-Harris price controls, the math doesn't work for these companies. And so you see a whole bunch of drug makers cutting back on research and development and basically canceling promising drug development lines. You know, Bristol-Myers Squibb just the other day canceled a blood cancer drug project because it was just too risky. The profits wouldn't be sufficient to cover all of the costs. I mean, 9 in 10 drugs never make it to market. So the one that does has to pay for all the investment in all the drugs that didn't get to market. And basically, the government has stepped in to help us, and it's making things worse.
Well, and the other piece is, and I don't know if it gets too far outside your lane, Dean, but just this week I was seeing that they're saying when the Biden administration says we're going to bring down the cost, we're going to negotiate with the pharma companies. Well, you're negotiating with a 9,000-pound gorilla when they say this is what you will sell it for, and the pharma companies have the choice of doing that or not selling any of the drugs. They say, okay, we'll sell it for that. But then they pass the cost along in some other way, or the insurance companies have to make up the difference. And you say, well, where are the insurance companies getting the money? As I understand it, heading up to the election, the Biden administration has now shoveled out billions of dollars to the insurance companies, who are squawking, saying, well, if you want us to bring these prescription drug prices down in what we charge to the person who's getting them, then you've got to get us the money some other way. So he just backdoors the money out of the U.S. Treasury, which, of course, is coming out of everybody's, all of our pockets anyway. So you pay less at the pharmacy counter and pay more out of your pocket another way. Have I figured that one out right?
Yeah, you got it exactly right. This was an interesting thing, because when they passed these changes to Medicare Part D, that's the prescription drug benefit, by the way, was created by Republicans about 20 years ago, wasn't it? It was George W. Bush, and by the way, it's been a very successful program because they use market forces and competition to hold down prices. And in fact, in the last few years, Part D coverage prices have been falling. They've been going down, which is unusual in American healthcare. But the Biden folks came in and basically tried to fix something that was not broken. And now there's been this surge in the monthly costs for seniors of the drug coverage. It's been about 400% increase over the last 2 years. And they realized earlier this year that the prices are going to go up even more in 2025, and the seniors are going to find out about it in letters from Medicare in September of this year, a few weeks before the election. So they panicked, and they said, what can we do? We'll dip our hand in the Medicare Trust Fund and throw billions of dollars at the health insurers as long as they agree to try to hold down these price increases until after the election. And it's a lot of money, like $24 billion. And a lot of that's going to go directly to the insurance company's bottom line. But some of it will help moderate the price increases. But you're going to see seniors getting letters basically saying, well, your coverage has gone from $30 a month in 2024 to $65 a month.
Ouch.
2025, and that's going to be one of the smaller increases. But it would have been even bigger if they hadn't thrown this bailout at the insurers. So it's just one level of incompetence layered on another.
I mean, Dean, isn't this, you know, the model for this, if you go back to the beginning of Biden, when he said, we've got to solve this insulin cost problem, except Trump had already done, he'd already addressed that and had it pretty well solved. So they threw out Trump's solution to create the problem, to dig the hole. And then they said, hey, there's a hole here. We know how to fill it in. They created the problem and then they solved the problem. Have I been unfair to Joe Biden in that?
No, not at all. You're right. Trump did address the insulin issue, and 90% of people had $35 a month or less cost for their insulin, but Biden and company basically said, oh no, that's a problem that we need to fix. It didn't need to be. And like the other price controls, it's going to have negative effects the way Biden's doing it. And, you know, what we need in healthcare is competition. And the drug companies are not saints, but they do deliver the cures that everybody needs. And when you let markets work, you can actually get those cures faster. You save money, people live longer and are happier, but you got to let the markets work. And that's the problem right now in American healthcare. They're not doing that.
No. Dean Clancy is the author, by the way, of 40 Centuries of Wage and Price Controls, How Not to Fight Inflation. He's also a senior policy guy with the Americans for Prosperity. Dean, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for your insights.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Take care now. That's Dean Clancy. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm glad to get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. When it comes...
He's the
best investment in talk radio. And it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, and we've got a number of ways for you to do it. Number one, call the show, 866-HEY-LARS. If you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the line. Number two, send me an email. I get about 1,100 a day. I try to answer all of them. I make my best effort. That's talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X, and today the question takes a little bit of explanation. Here's what's going on. Donald Trump, about a week ago, proposed three presidential debates that he had already negotiated with three different networks, all of them relatively liberal, Fox, NBC, and ABC. Kamala Harris said, nah, I'm only doing one in September, but I will do one in October. Leading me to this question, should the second presidential debate be held at a point where millions of people have already cast their ballots? I would say no to that. Should it be done before people have voted or after they have voted, millions of them, not all of them, because, of course, the official election date, which keeps getting bigger and bigger, is November the 5th. So should the second presidential debate be held after millions have voted or before? I vote for before September, which is when the date, the dates that Donald Trump has arranged lie, all in September. Kamala Harris wants to do it last minute after a lot of voters have already voted. I think that's a dumb idea, but it's Kamala Harris. What do you say? Today's poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show. Let me go first to, Larry. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Lars. I just heard on the top of the hour news, Senator Ted Cruz wants to reopen the investigation of cocaine found in the White House. He needs to ask the question, if cocaine can be brought into the White House, couldn't fentanyl also be brought to the White House?
It could be. Go ahead.
And with that, I could only hope for this answer from the administration. Well, Hunter Biden doesn't use fentanyl.
Although, on a more serious note, I thought you were going a different direction because, Larry, imagine this. Has there already been one serious attempt on Donald Trump's life?
Yes.
Okay. And on the day before a bullet hit Donald Trump's ear, the federal authorities arrested a guy from Pakistan who is indicted for allegedly conspiring with Iran, who wants Donald Trump dead, and they'd rather have Kamala Harris in the White House. He was arrested. He's in custody waiting trial. We don't know how many other attempts have been made. And then we had this situation yesterday where Trump is in North Carolina. He's a couple of minutes from arriving at a site. The Secret Service is supposed to be at the ready, standing their posts, and one of the Secret Service agents, without permission or knowledge of her supervisor, decides to leave her post and go inside to breastfeed her baby. This is the Secret Service under what they say is ramped up security for Donald Trump. Now, let me get back to the fentanyl. Larry, you know that cops will tell you if there's fentanyl on a table and a cop goes into that room and puts his hand on that table, he can absorb enough fentanyl to overdose and even kill him.
That's right. It only takes a couple grains. I understand that, Lars.
Yeah, well, imagine this. If somebody can get cocaine into the White House, could they get enough fentanyl into the White House to be able to actually make an attempt on the life of an American president? I think the answer to that is yes. Larry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Matt. Hey, Matt, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, I wanted to bring something up about inflation. I think President Trump is missing this. J.D. Vance is missing this. The argument from the Republicans has migrated from, you know, inflation is high and the rate of inflation is high. And then it sort of becomes, well, so now that the rate of inflation has come down, they're focusing on how much prices are up since Trump lost the election. What they're missing is this. I'm going to take the low number of $300 a month. The average family is paying an extra $300 a month. That money's gone, Lars.
Yep.
It's gone. It's not.
You never get it back.
It's not like, no, it's never coming back. And here's the other thing. Let's say you're a guy who works hard. You've got a little IRA set up. Maybe your wife's got an IRA set up. And you've been contributing $300 a month to that IRA for future retirement benefits.
Yep.
You took that money that could have gone in there
and you put it towards groceries and energy, which you needed to do because you have to support your family. Trump needs to make this. I don't interview him from time to time, but he needs to begin to make this argument, because not only is there the money is gone forever, it's a missed opportunity for everybody who's trying to invest for their future. So it's not just, oh, the rate of inflation is that. Well, the rate of the level of inflation over the last 4 years is this high. No. This is so much bigger than what they're talking about. And I'll be honest with you, I'm shocked that Donald Trump doesn't have someone in his on his staff that's pointing this out, that this money is gone now.
I hope there is. I have a feeling Trump likes to make his own decisions about what to say. But can I amplify your argument a bit? Because everybody has adopted the media's language, which is inflation is down. It is not down. And let me use the benchmark I use. Because for about 20 years before Trump came in, okay, we were running along at about 1.9% per year. What was the average during Trump's 4 years, not counting the weird economic effects of the pandemic? It was 1.7% per year. That was the average. What was it the day that Joe Biden took office? 1.4. It's now at 3. Well, you don't have to be a math genius to say, so when they say inflation is down, it's only running at twice the rate that it was when Joe Biden took office. It is 100% higher than it was in January of 2021, just three and a half years ago. So you say it's down. It's only down compared to the stratospheric numbers that Joe Biden drove it to, where we saw 9%. It's like hitting yourself in the head, and you say, why do you do that? Well, because it feels so good when I stop. They've tried to change your perspective and say, well, if inflation was 9 and now it's all the way down to about 3, that's lower. No, it's twice as high as it was when you took office. It's at least 50% higher than it was for 10 years before Donald Trump came in, and even during the Trump years. So it's only low in relative terms. And here's the other measure that I think is a fair way to measure it, Matt. If inflation is up about 20% higher than it was 3 years ago, I'll ask you a personal question if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Has your paycheck gone up 20% in the last 3 years?
No.
Mine hasn't either.
I mean, I'm being frank with you. I'm an investor, so I've benefited from the rally in the market.
I don't
doubt
it.
That's sort of my point. That's sort of my point, Lars, because I can invest, but a lot of people can't. And so their money is just gone now, and their opportunity is gone. And you're making a great point. You're saying, if let's say inflation had never gone above 9%.
Yep.
Let's say all it had done is it had risen to, 2.9%.
Twice as high.
It's still too high.
Yeah. It's still too high, and especially, I mean, if everybody's paycheck was going up 5% a year and inflation was running at 3, you say, hey, I'm gaining ground. Every year I'm 2% better off than I was. Right now, for anybody who got a 20% raise in the last 3 years, and that ain't too many people, you'd say, well, you're treading water. You're still at the same place financially that you were 3.5 years ago. You haven't moved forward not one little bit. And that is disaster for a lot of families. And you're right. In the long term, the money you're not putting in your 401k or your IRA, that's going to mean bad news for you from your point of retirement all the way through the end of your life. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. To adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I feel like Christmas has arrived early, because if you listen to this show, you know that naysayers always go to the head of the line. Except I have on the phone with me right now what I have to describe as, in talk radio terms, a unicorn. Guy Smith, a Kamala Harris campaign surrogate, Democrat strategist, and former special advisor to President Clinton. Mr. Smith, welcome to the show.
It's great to be back on with you, Lars.
I want to hear why you think that Kamala Harris is the best choice for President of the United States.
Kamala Harris is the best choice because she worries about the average middle-class citizen. Donald Trump just takes care of the billionaires. Gave him a $1 trillion tax cut. You said in the earlier segment you hadn't gotten a raise. You got a raise with that tax cut, and so did I. But most Americans didn't. And he's now already saying he's going to do it again.
Well, hold on, Mr. Smith. I got to ask you about that. You figure that when the government lets me keep more of the money that I earned, that that's a raise? Does the government own all my money, and how much I get is determined by how much the government lets me keep?
So you're going to take more from the middle class and less from Elon Musk, who has more money than God, and you're going to take less from the pharmaceutical companies, which, by the way, you said in the earlier segment, or your guest did, that Trump did the $35 for insulin. That is not true. President Biden and Vice President Harris did that. And that's what the folks listening to this show right now can pay $35. And the big pharmaceutical companies aren't going to miss a beat, Lars. Not a beat. And
well, also, I've got to disagree with you about that, because Trump had already addressed the insulin problem, and 90%+ of the people were already buying insulin at $35 when Biden came in, wiped out that program.
That's just not true, Lars. It's just not true. You're misleading your listeners.
I don't believe so.
This business of you're going to look it up. You know, they can look it up.
Well, believe me, I have.
Further answer, so have I. That's what I do. I talk about it. And now, yesterday, Trump's economic, when he couldn't attack people, he was talking about raising the tariffs. You know this because you do economic stuff.
I do.
Tariffs were a major contributing factor to the Great Depression. They increased.
Oh, Smoot-Hawley? Yeah, but Smoot-Hawley was a dumb idea from a dumb president.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. It was a dumb idea. And those kind of punitive tariffs today are just as dumb. But, you know, there's other dumb things that are going on. I mean, this business for Trump and the abortion, trying to, you know, control women's bodies. You got lots of listeners now.
Hold on. We have quite a few. But Mr. Smith, Donald Trump's position on abortion is the Supreme Court has said this is a decision for the states. And when people said, and there were a lot of pro-life people like me, I didn't say I want to make this decision at the federal level. I said, let the states make that decision. That's Trump's position as well. What's wrong with that?
Trump's position was, I brought you Roe versus Wade. He says it. It's on tape.
Well, I agree with the revocation of Roe v. Wade. There never was a right to abortion in the Constitution. I've read it. Where do you find the right to abortion in the Constitution?
Citizens getting to make a decision for their own body. So you want these guys.
But their own body does not include that little living human being inside of them who is half their own body, the woman's body, and half the DNA of daddy. I know enough biology to know that.
Good for you. The women that are listening to your show right now think this is a really bad idea.
Do unborn children not have any rights, Mr. Smith?
You know what? We're not talking about this. We're talking about women being able to make a decision for themselves. And
well, if their decision is to kill a child, does society have something to do with it? I mean, I want parents to make decisions for their kids. But if a parent said, my kid's such a bad kid, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to say, then you're going to jail for murder.
You just said you want parents to make decisions. Why do you not want the mother to be able to make a decision with her doctor?
To kill her baby? No. She can make all kinds of decisions, decide not to smoke, decide not to drink, decide not to take illegal drugs. I don't want her to do those things because it hurts the baby. I think the baby's got rights. I want to ask you about a few other issues, though. Number one, you say it's because Kamala Harris cares. A lot of people care about things. I want people who can do something. She was given a job, a border czar. All the media touted her as the border czar. And what happened to our border?
There you go. 15... You're misleading your listeners again. She was not the border czar. She did, was okay. asked to negotiate.
We're going to argue about the title. Was she given the responsibility by Joe Biden to deal with our border crisis?
She was given the responsibility to negotiate with three Central American countries to reduce the number of people heading to the border and to pay to keep them back.
And did she perform?
Now, here's what happened. Trump said to his mealy-mouthed members of Congress, Mitch McConnell and Mike Johnson and those guys, oh, we don't want to get rid of, we don't want to have this bipartisan deal on immigration because that will help the other side.
That's another Democrat talking point. Let me challenge you on that. There were two bills. H.R. 1 was passed by the House of Representatives, and the Senate refused to act on it. That was border security. Then the Senate, along with that Republican Rhino Lankford, cooked up a plan that institutionalized 5,000 illegal aliens a day, and they said, why won't you go for this compromise? We'll agree to cut it from 10,000 a day to 5,000 a day.
The bill you're talking about also paved your driveway, and that's why the Senate rejected that bill. But the pure bill was just killed by Mitch McConnell and Mike Johnson.
For good reason.
But what happened? Then the Biden-Harris administration issued an executive order, and what happened? Where are we today? We have fewer border crossings today than when Trump left office. Let me say
I don't believe those numbers. Why is it we've had 20 million come, 15 to 20 million come in under Biden? You're telling me that more than that came in under Trump?
Well, there you go. You're reading the RNC talking points. You thought that?
No, I'm not.
Too many.
No, I'm not. I've talked to CBP. I've talked to ICE. They tell at the beginning of this year we were at about 12 million. Now, whatever the actual number.
Here's another thing on immigration. Trump goes on about they're all coming from insane asylums, for which there is no
evidence from
anybody. Okay.
Well, I'm asking you, Mr. Smith,
the problem, Lars, is that he's confusing insane asylums with people fleeing from aggression and seeking asylum. The United States has a law where someone can apply for asylum. Now,
from persecution.
Not working as smooth. Yeah, from persecution. You ever been to some of these Central American places? You ever been to
Thankfully,
Venezuela?
I've never traveled to those kinds of countries. Guy, we're going to have you back one of these days. That's Guy Smith, a Kamala Harris campaign surrogate. So unicorns do exist. There are liberal lefties who believe in Kamala Harris, willing to come on the show. He's former special advisor to President Bill Clinton, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists, Oregon Medical Centers. Our X poll today has to do with the fact that Donald Trump has both negotiated with three different liberal networks, Fox, NBC, and ABC, for three different presidential debates in the month of September. Kamala Harris has agreed to do one of those debates, but now she says she wants to do a second debate, but not until October, after millions of Americans have already cast their ballots or expected to cast their ballots. So The poll on X today, I wrote this one, should the second presidential debate be held after millions of people have voted or before? I vote for before. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll find it on my website at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go first to Carrie. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Lars. You know, I listen every day while I'm here at work. I notice a pattern with these older men that are calling in. They use the same script, misleading, misrepresenting. They don't have any facts, but you're wrong, and you lay out the facts for them, and then they've got to change the subject. And, you know, I think, well, why don't they listen to a left-leaning Democratic-type station if they want to, you know, be in their element?
But because there aren't any. Because there aren't any. And, you know, since you're doing this from work, you want to give your work a plug? I don't even know where you work, but where do you work?
Oh, I'm an interior decorator, and I have a business called Manor Born.
Well, good for you, Manor Born. That's actually a good. That's a good name. Well, yeah. I guess I think that the way they answer in and of itself tells you a lot. I mean, if I decide to advance a thought, and I put out crazy ideas all the time, and I always identify them if they're my crazy ideas. But I also say, here's how I got there. Here's the information I built it on. I want to back up my argument. But you're right. There are an awful lot of liberals who'll say, well, that just isn't true. The border is more secure. And all you have to do is ask. Go ahead.
Oh, I just say, I guess I'm kind of a serious person. I come to your show, I get facts, I get information, I get the background on things. And these guys, when they don't have anything of substance, they sneak in some innuendo, or they sneak in a little joke, or they sneak in, and it's like they almost like they've been drinking or something. And
Kool-Aid is what they drink.
Yeah, that's not why I'm here. I'm here for a different kind of fun. So thank you for my daily dose.
Can I tell you what I always tell people? They say, why do you put these naysayers on? I say, well, here's why. Why do you go to the zoo? You go to the zoo to see animals that are unusual, and you don't see them in your daily activities. So you go to the zoo to see a giraffe or an elephant or a hippopotamus or a rhino or a tiger, and you say, why? Well, because I don't see them in my regular life. I would guess that most conservatives don't run into a lot of full-blown liberals in their daily activities, or at least they don't show their stripes in their daily activities. And when you hear them on here and you say, nobody could possibly believe that Kamala Harris is better for America. And when his first argument out of the gate, Guy Smith, you know, we've talked to him before. He's a nice enough guy. I just think he's completely wrong. When he says, well, she's the best president because she cares. You know what? That was the old Bill Clinton, I feel your pain stuff. You feel my pain, but what are you going to do to assuage my pain? Well, not much of anything, but I sure feel it. I care about you more than anything. Now, I'm not going to do anything to actually fix things, but I care about you. I think Trump fixes things.
I tell you, I'm 100%. When he came down that escalator, I said to my friends, we're going to save America. And, you know, I lost a lot of friends, but they weren't really friends, if that's how you lose them.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks, Carrie. I appreciate the call. Let's go to David Cross, who gathers up information on illegal aliens. David, welcome to the program. Before you make your point, I want you to notice something about the guy I talked to. He uses an argument that's very familiar to the left. And their argument goes this way. There are fewer illegals coming into America right now than there were during Trump. And all you have to do is say, well, hold on. Border Patrol says at least 12 million as of the beginning of this year. Maybe it's 15, maybe it's 20. Nobody really knows. If they tell you that fewer illegals are coming in now than during Trump, does that mean that we had more than 15 million illegals come in during Donald Trump and nobody noticed?
Lars, I think there are more than they're indicating. They've done all sorts of things to manipulate things, to fly people into the country.
that may not even qualify to be legitimately here. So in the future, if things don't change, then ICE will have to track them down wherever they're at in the country and remove them. And one other point, Lars, is if you look at the U.S. Border Patrol website, they have a section on criminal aliens and people that have reentered the country.
Yep.
And it increased by hundreds of percent during the Biden-Harris administration. And it's right there, and people don't even want to look at that. I've done reports on it in the past, but it usually goes during the calendar year. And so it's just so much. And we see so many victims out there, and you've talked about them. You know, like the report that I sent to Donovan to post today, 4 individuals in the Seattle area of Western Washington dealing fentanyl. And how did they get here? Hondurans.
Absolutely right. David, thank you.
The Lars